Hello and welcome to the CEO Blind Spot Show, where leaders lead leaders. I'm your host, Birgit Camps, and today's guest is Dr. Scott Tinker, who is the chairman of the Switch Energy Alliance, the CEO of Tinker Energy Associates, and he was and is currently helping find his replacement as director of the 250-person Bureau of Economic Geology at UT Austin, and has even been a TEDx speaker and given over 1,000 keynote speeches all over the world. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thanks, Birgit.
Yeah. So when I was looking at your background, I'm like, how am I going to introduce you? Because there's like pages and pages of all your successes. You succeeded as a leader, not just in for-profits, also in nonprofits, as an entrepreneur. And earlier on in your career, you were promoted several times at Marathon Oil Company. I'm just curious, what are one or two reasons why you think you have succeeded as a leader in so many different areas?
I think my success is very arguable. It's you say yes a lot, and pretty soon you end up in a coal mine in Vietnam, you know. And that's literally, I think, how I've treated life. Just say yes a lot and grow from those experiences. So that's how my career has taken shape.
Oh, and that's how you ended up traveling to over 65 countries and learning about cultures, I bet.
It is. It is. And you know, as we get older, yes is harder,
Yes.
but nonetheless, I think it's really important
Yeah.
to grow from those experiences and continue to expand your horizons, because life tends to want to narrow you and focus you, and you got to resist that, right?
Well, a lot of people say that they have figured out how to be a good leader through trial and error. Others have been through programs, some of them through both. How did you learn to be a leader?
Just doing it. And also, I wasn't a leader in the classic sense of the term for, gosh, the first 15, 20 years of my career. I was a technical person. So I had the experience of being led. And you learn a lot from the great leaders and those that are still learning, I'd say. Mentors, wonderful mentors, 360 mentorship throughout my career. And then just listening, trying to be humble with people. I mean, I've led lots of organizations now, and just listening to them closely as you would like to be listened to. A lot of humility, not trying to force things down on people, but being pretty careful and candid. Again, leadership, you can't try to be loved by everyone. That just won't work. You got to be candid. And I think people at the end of the day, even if they don't necessarily want to hear that, they really appreciate the candor, the integrity, the honesty, and the truth that comes from you. And that makes progress a lot more straightforward.
Well, I had to chuckle when you said 15 years of learning by working for leaders, some more effective than others, and being humble and listening. Number one complaint I hear right now from a lot of team members that they don't feel like anybody listens to them, especially not their leaders. So also, it seems like you're also really smart, figure things out. You have several degrees and several times have graduated with honors, and you've even been recognized as being a top geologist in Texas. But once you transition into leadership, would you say that you learned so much early on that you then did great, or did you yourself struggle as a leader? Okay, well, your chuckle answers that question. Where did you once struggle?
Daily. I think if you think you have things figured out, you're not paying attention. Any workplace, any environment is so dynamic. There's always changes and things to learn along the way, which makes it fun. This is what makes leadership and being involved in organizations so much fun, is just the dynamicism of that interaction. But generations change, language changes, perspectives change. I look back. My career started in 1982 out of college. I look back, and what we were saying and doing and thinking then is very different from today. So it really is that process of just adapting to change, but not losing the fundamental principles. The fundamental underpinnings of human respect and interaction are so critical to things, and then you kind of build around that.
So what would you say was different in those days versus now?
Gosh, if we had thought to say, hey, can I take Fridays and Mondays and work from home? They would have said, sure, take Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday as well.
Exactly, you're done.
Get another job. And the technology wasn't there to do that, even if we wanted to in some of the technical jobs. And certainly in the service industry, you have to be in places. That's different. The whole family dynamic is different. My daughter-in-law works at ExxonMobil. My son's a geologist as well. And she's going through fertility processes that Exxon pays for. And there's long periods of time for mothers and dads with their kids. Again, this didn't exist four decades ago.
Yeah.
So a lot of neat things, I think, that have come about culturally to encourage both the workplace and the family, if you will, whatever that family dynamic looks like. It doesn't have to be a man and a woman. It doesn't have to be two people, you know, a lot of dynamics there. And that's the neat part about it, is that adaptability and recognition that people have lives and they also have the workplace. And how do you bring those together?
Well, you say that's the neat thing, but a lot of leaders right now are really struggling with it. So was there an aha moment for you where you're like, hey, I need to adjust my leadership style?
Yes, certainly COVID brought that on. We had 250 people at the Bureau of Economic Geology, 25 different nations on permanent staff, so very culturally diverse, and built that over two decades. Very exciting that way. COVID brought us home. We were working from home, and we're a very technical group over there, lots of labs and PhDs and doing global research, and a lot of that requires interaction. So I brought us back, and that wasn't that popular with some. So we worked through it. You know, and try to be flexible a little bit, depending on the circumstances, but not inconsistently flexible. So whenever you have a case where you say that makes sense, you have to make sure that you're not setting a precedent that others feel is unfair or unjust. And be open about why you're doing things and what you're doing. Don't try to hide it. You can't hide things. You just have to be on the table about them and explain why. And most people, I think, understand that kind of logical thinking and the reasoning behind it. They don't have to agree, but at least you're open about why you do things and then adapt those. This is one of the great, I think, opportunities we all have, is try something and good intentions and then adapt, change. Don't get stuck in that intention if there are unintended outcomes to it. And there always are. Adapt and morph as you go forward and continue to learn from what you're doing. But don't get stuck in an analysis paralysis place either, where you don't ever implement anything. It's just try some things, give it a good thought, try it, adapt it as you go, listen to the input, and you end up moving through pretty well.
So it sounds like in that moment, you realize you had to adapt a little bit and give that a try, but still stand for what you thought would work best.
Yes. And gather data. I'm a data guy. So get information about the main metrics, whatever your business is. What do you measure? What's important to you?
Yeah.
In our case, publications were important. Laboratory analysis were important. Getting grants was important. Global interactions. And a lot of those things needed to be done in the facility. And we measure those outcomes and track them and keep the data. And that allows all of us to say, yep, that seems to be working, or let's tweak it here and there.
Okay. So then you're kind of catapulting me into another question I had for you, which is, how did you make it through crisis and what tips do you have for other leaders? And it sounds like one clue you just gave us is make sure you watch the data.
Yes, gather data as much as you can, both quantified and qualified. Listen to people and understand what outcomes you're seeking. We're sitting at the beginning of a COVID crisis and nobody knows where that's going. As the data start to come in, we begin to understand more. So what outcomes are we seeking? And again, that mattered a lot. I've been president of several international organizations as well. You can't do everything. You can't be all things to all humans. So what outcomes are you seeking? And that often helps to guide the strategies and the tactics around planning and implementing things.
Yeah.
Make sure to understand pretty well what it is that would define success. And then laughingly, I say this, but quite often I'm sitting in boardrooms. I sit on boards and speak to a lot of boards. And sometimes I'll say, well, what's the question? Well, I've been talking for an hour and I think we might have lost the thread a little bit on what it is. What's the question? What are we trying to solve for here? And that's really important to keep that in mind.
What a great question. I sit on a few boards too, and you're right. Sometimes I feel all I do is direct people to what's the desired outcome question.
Yeah.
So is that also what had you then launch the weekly radio program called Earth Date, given what you're up to on a global perspective?
Oh boy. You know, I got engaged in communicating science a long time ago. It's so important because we hear these days, the science says, well, candidly, there isn't the science. There's science. Science is a process that's always adapting. It doesn't have an outcome. It has an ongoing process of investigation. So the science with capital letters is often quoted. And it's odd. Scientists hear that and go, that's interesting. So what I've liked to do and have been passionate about is communicating science. Earth Date is a 2-minute radio program on, 460 NPR and public radio stations in all 50 states now. We've been recording that for 6 years, approaching 400 episodes. And it takes some little cool piece of something about Earth, but not the Earth. Lots of things, from wine to bugs to algae. and we talk about them in a very neat, succinct summary form. Similar thing, I've got a PBS show called Energy Switch, and I have two guests on every episode, highly produced there and running on over 200 PBS stations, about 80% of them nationwide. Deep dialogues on energy and climate, and they don't always agree. They're very high-placed people, but we talk civilly there. And that's the point. Civil dialogue, it's not a black and white binary conversation. There's a lot to these dialogues and conversations that people are appreciating hearing more depth, because they know it's not simple binary. They know that in their gut. So that's the goal, again, just to communicate things in a way that is digestible. That and making films, it all led me down that path.
Yeah, but the bigger picture of all that sounds like it's to prevent a crisis that we may all face, right? If we're not educated on both, you know, the energy and the environment. And I learned some stuff by listening to the 2-minute programs. I learned about bees of the seas.
Yes, we have a wonderful researcher, Julie Hennings. He's a geologist and a great director. I'm just a pretty voice and a pretty face and all these things. The brains are elsewhere, trust me.
I don't know about that. But
what I try to do when I speak, and I said this, I think, to Joe Manchin's climate hearing a few years ago, is not only be completely factual, but factually complete. Mm-hmm. And factual completeness is very difficult. There's plenty of completely factual things out there today. Some call that cherry picking the facts, but whatever. Here's some facts. And we run with that. But factual completeness is impossible, but it should be a goal we all strive to share the pros and cons of things, to look at the nuance a little bit more, to look at the trade-offs. And everything in the world has trade-offs. There's no truth, really. There's just trade-offs out there. Mm. And we can seek truth. That's always been a goal of most of us. But looking at the factual completeness is the real challenge. And again, that's what we try to accomplish with our films and radio programs.
And it sounds like to make it through crisis, it's really important to aim for that.
It is. And in crisis, we get so much so quickly these days on various media, whatever you end up feeding yourself, the algorithm then feeds you more of it. And you feel like you know everything when in fact, you've just been led down the path you self-directed.
Yes.
And there's a lot more out there. So how do you go about accumulating enough information to make good decisions in crises? And everybody has an opinion and a narrative today. Everybody's selling things. That's not changed, but you do follow the money and you can find pretty quickly where the different money trails lead. And that's not just to industry or governments. It's to NGOs as well. Giant money behind NGOs these days. I mean, huge money. So everybody has somewhere they're leading. And it's harder to get information because they're not just Walter Cronkite on the news at night. It's everywhere. And that's the challenge, is trying to assimilate enough information from different sources that you can come to some reasonable conclusion in these times of crisis.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I certainly appreciate you sharing your insights, especially given that you've seen leaders in different positions. You've been a leader yourself in so many different ways. And if people want to know more, they can go to switchon.org. or earthdate.org. But thank you again for contributing your insights, you know, in this world where everyone's trying to get the facts, but they need to aim for what you described already, the complete facts.
You bet. And Birgit, thanks for hosting me. Thanks for what you do. It's very much needed in the world today. So I appreciate being on your show.